Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hope everybody is doing their best right now as we're going through this crazy time in our world. I'm Tony Bruschi, host of Real Ghost Stories Online. I wanted to invite you and let you know about our other brand new podcast that we just launched, Help Kill the Time for You. It's called The Dark Side of Wikipedia. It's about true crime and dark history. We dive into some of the strangest, most disturbed minds and experiences from our history and examine their story, their Wikipedia entry, and then discuss the cases, the individuals, and the psychology of the events as we go through each and every story. Some of our first episodes include Ed Gein, the BTK killer, the New London school explosion, Amityville murders, Richard Speck, Amelia Dyer, the General Slocum disaster, Jeffrey Dahmer, and more. New episodes every single week. Check out Dark Side of Wikipedia. Search it. Subscribe wherever you download podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and more. It's available now with new episodes every single week. Dark Side of Wikipedia. Search and subscribe today and stay safe out there. In the center of the United States, it's an area known as Tornado Alley, an area that year after year has been proven to be a hotspot for the formation of large and violent tornadoes. On the evening of May 22nd, 2011, a twister that was more than a mile wide dealt a direct blow to the city of Joplin, Missouri, rendering its hospital nearly unusable and hundreds of residents lying injured or dead in its wake.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
The 2011 Joplin tornado was a powerful and catastrophic EF5 rated multi-vortex tornado that struck Joplin, Missouri on the evening of Sunday, May 22nd, 2011. It was part of a larger late May tornado outbreak and reached a maximum width of nearly 1 mile during its path through the southern part of the city. This particular tornado was unusual in that it intensified in strength and grew larger in size at its very fast rate. The tornado tracked eastward across the city and then continued eastward across Interstate 44 into rural portions of Jasper County and Newton County. It was the third tornado to strike Joplin since May of 1971. Overall, the tornado killed 158 people, with an additional 8 indirect deaths. injured some 1,150 others, and caused damages amounting to a total of $2.8 billion. It was the deadliest tornado to strike the United States since the 1947 Glazer-Higgins-Woodward tornadoes, and the seventh deadliest overall. It also ranks as the costliest single tornado in U.S. history. Insurance payout was $2.8 billion, the highest in Missouri history, with the previous record of $2 billion being the April 10, 2001 hailstorm. So today, tornado on the dark side of Wikipedia, the Joplin tornado. The word Joplin tornado, if you're living in this part of the country, you hear it and you know what you're talking about. I'm not quite sure if in other parts of the country, if it's as well recognized or known, just because I'm not there. And, you know, you tend to know stuff that happened around you. But we were in Wichita when this occurred.
So we were about 3 hours away.
Yeah, not far at all. I mean, I remember it. I know you remember it. What's your Tony and Jenny Brewski, by the way, for a Dark Side of Wikipedia on today's episode. Press subscribe wherever you're, listening. What are your memories of the Joplin tornado?
I just remember that I remember hearing about it initially, and that it was, you know, reported that the hospital took a direct hit.
Yeah.
And that it was a very big one. And it's, you know, as often as we have tornadoes, you think we'd have the big ones like that all the time. The big ones are more rare than you would think. But they said that this was a very big one. And this was all very, you know, early on, preliminary. They were just kind of given reports.
Yeah.
But it struck late afternoon, so they were able to see the damage and see what happened. But I had a coworker who he had moved to Wichita from Joplin, but all of his family lived in Joplin.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, I got to go. I got to go see what's left.
Yeah.
And so he did. And both his parents and his brother lost their homes.
Yeah.
And thankfully, nobody in his family died. But
sure.
Yeah, that was one of the worst ones in a long time. And you know, people along the coast, you know, they know all the hurricanes by name. You know, we forget the hurricanes unless they're like, we know Katrina, we know Hurricane Harvey, we know Hurricane Maria. But, you know, people along the coast, they'll be like, oh, yeah, hurricane whatever back in whatever year, you know.
Yeah.
That's how we are about tornadoes. You know, we remember the tornadoes by their name. And roughly about when they struck.
And we named them now. We didn't used to. I don't think this one even had a name. Did it have a name back then? I don't think so.
We name them by the city that they decimate.
Yeah, yeah. But they give them names now in some cases.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if like National Weather Service technically does, or if it's more like media outlets give them names because it's more exciting.
No, they name them by what they hit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, technically, yes, you're right. But I have now heard on some media outlets naming like big storms.
That's different. That's storm systems. That's okay. Not a tornado.
Okay. They're just like naming the system.
The individual tornado does not get. I mean, that's like how they name winter storms now.
I see what you're saying.
Which they didn't do when we were kids.
So we're like one step away from the actual tornado getting a name.
No, they're not going to ever do that because they're just going to go by the name of the city and the year, because places like you said, Joplin's been hit three times, you know, that they're just going to go by the, you know, more. How many times has more Oklahoma been hit?
Yeah.
By F5s.
Sure.
So they just go by the city name and the year.
Okay. Yeah. I remember this. Around that time, there was like a lot of tornadoes going on in that part of the country, from Moore, Oklahoma, to Joplin. It was like one after another.
Yeah, there's seasons that are a lot worse than others. Like this season was, I mean, yeah, this is the year we went through a tornado, but it was an October tornado. But this spring was a really, really mild spring compared to some of the others, you know, and we're only 10 miles from Oklahoma. So, you know, we're right there in Tornado Alley.
My main memories are just being a lot of, there were so many violent storms in the course of just a very few years when this one struck. And I'm in no way trying to downplay, but there was just, it's like just a brash of just shitty weather events, one after another, that were horrible. And being on the air, trying to, you know, do play-by-play of them to a certain extent, you know, where you're just giving updates. Here's what's going on. Here's the latest. And it's, you know, it's a little easier when it's not in your own backyard, but I mean, it's like the yard next door.
Yeah.
You know, and you're talking about it, and, you know, everybody's got friends and family over in these places. And I think it was the Moore one where the school got hit.
Yeah, and that was, I think that was a couple years later.
Yeah, and that, I remember that. I kind of cluster all these together in my brain just because there were so many that were almost back to back, you know, when you look back at it retrospectively. And that one was the one that really, these were all horrible, but there was a school that was hit in that, the Moore one, and several children died, didn't they? Because like a wall fell and...
Yeah, and they were trapped and there was water coming
in. Yeah, it was, yeah.
You had to be on air and live report that one because that was, you know, Moore, Oklahoma is right outside of Oklahoma City, and it's not very far from Wichita. And so that was one that you were on the air for. And of course, you know, we had a kindergartner at the time.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that was not fun being on the air. And you worry about all those sort of things. And I think there was two times I kind of broke down on the air. The Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
9/11, I ran out of breath. I mean, we threw to national coverage so quickly on 9/11 that, you know, had we continued locally, I'm sure it would have happened. But I was like, I can't speak, you know, because you're just overwhelmed. But those were two times where it was just like, I got to stop when I'm trying to read this story because it was so difficult. But so it was active several years of tornadoes, and you just don't know when you're going to have an active year and when you're not. And that's one of the things that comes along with living in this part of the country. Let's continue on with the story of this tornado, the Joplin tornado of 2011. The tornado initially touched down just east of the Missouri-Kansas state line near the end of 32nd Street at 5:34 p.m. and tracked due east, downing a few trees at EF0 intensity. Eyewitnesses and storm chasers reported multiple vortices rotating around the parent circulation in the area. Civil defense sirens sounded in Joplin 20 minutes before the tornado struck in response to a tornado warning issued by the National Weather Service at 5:17 p.m. For northwestern Newton and southwestern Jasper counties in Missouri and southeastern portions of Cherokee County, Kansas, but many Joplin residents did not heed them. The tornado strengthened to EF1 intensity as it continued through rural areas towards Joplin, snapping trees and power poles and damaging outbuildings. Widening, the tornado then tracked into more densely populated southwest corner of the city near the Twin Hills Country Club. It heavily damaged several homes in a subdivision in this area at EF1 and EF2 strength. The tornado continued to strengthen as it ripped through another subdivision just east of Iron Gates Road. Numerous homes were destroyed at EF2 and EF3 strengths at that location, and multiple vehicles were tossed around, some of which were thrown or rolled into homes. A now massive wedge tornado then crossed south Sheffer-Decker Avenue, producing its first area of EF4 damage as several small but well-built commercial buildings were flattened. Consistent EF4 and EF5 damage was noted east of this area and continued through most of the southern Joplin area. Numerous homes, residential buildings, a medical building were flattened in this area, with concrete walls collapsed and crushed to the foundations. A large steel-reinforced step and floor structure leading to a completely destroyed medical building was deflected upward several inches and cracked. Steel trusses from some of the buildings were rolled up like paper, and deformation, twisting of the main support beams were noted. Multiple vehicles were thrown and mangled or wrapped around trees nearby. Several 300-pound concrete parking stops anchored with rebar were torn from a parking lot in this area and were thrown up to 60 yards away. Iowa State University wind engineer Parthas Sarkar was able to calculate the force needed to remove the parking stops and found that winds exceeding 200 miles an hour were needed to tear them from the parking lot. Damage became remarkably widespread and catastrophic at around the nearby St. John's Regional Medical Center, which lost many windows, interior walls, ceilings, and part of its roof. Its life flight helicopter was also blown away and destroyed. Five fatalities were caused by loss of backup power, and the nine-story building was so damaged that it was deemed structurally compromised and was later torn down. According to the NWS office in Springfield, Missouri, such extreme structural damage to such a large and well-built structure was likely indicative of winds at or exceeding 200 miles an hour. Vehicles in the hospital parking lot were thrown into the air and mangled beyond recognition, including a semi-truck that was tossed 125 yards and wrapped completely around a debarked tree. Wind rowing of debris was noted in this area, and additional concrete parking stops were removed from the St. John's parking lot as well. Virtually every house near McClellan Boulevard and 26th Street were flattened. Some were swept completely away, and trees sustained severe debarking. As the tornado tracked eastward, it maintained EF5 strength as it crossed Main Street between 20th and 26th Streets. It heavily damaged every business along that stretch, and several institutional buildings were virtually destroyed. It tracked just south of downtown, narrowly missing it. Entire neighborhoods were leveled in this area, with some more homes swept away and trees completely stripped of their bark. At some residences, reinforced concrete porches were deformed and in some cases completely torn away. Damage to driveways was noted at some residences as well. Numerous vehicles were tossed up to several blocks away of the residence where they originated, and a few homeowners never located their vehicles. A large church, Greenbrier Nursing Home, Franklin Technology Center, St. Mary's Catholic Church, and school in Joplin High School were all destroyed along this corridor. The Greenbrier Nursing Home was completely leveled, with 21 fatalities occurring there alone. As the tornado crossed Connecticut Avenue further to the east, it destroyed several large apartment buildings, a Dillon's grocery store, and a bank. Only the concrete vault remained at the bank, and a wooden 2x4 was found speared completely through a concrete curb at one location as well. No one was in the high school at the time. The high school graduation ceremonies, held about 3 miles to the north at Missouri Southern State University, had concluded shortly before the storm. Pieces of cardboard were found embedded sideways into stucco walls that remained standing at Joplin High School. Steel beams and pieces of fencing were deeply embedded into the ground in fields near the high school as well. Steel fence posts were bent to the ground in opposite directions, and a school bus was thrown in a nearby bus garage. The tornado then approached Range Line Road, the main commercial strip in the eastern part of Joplin, affecting additional neighborhoods starting along 20th Street. The now heavily rain-wrapped tornado continued at EF5 intensity as it crossed Range Line Road in that corridor between 13th and 32nd Streets. The tornado continued producing catastrophic damage, as it was its widest at the point, being nearly 1 mile wide. As the tornado hit the Pizza Hut at 1901 South Ridgeline Road, the store manager, Christopher Lucas, herded 4 employees and 15 customers into a walk-in freezer. With difficulty closing the door, he wrapped a bungee cable holding the door shut around his arm until he was sucked out and killed by the tornado. The tornado completely destroyed Walmart Supercenter number 59, a Home Depot, and numerous other businesses and restaurants in the area, many of which were flattened. Numerous metal roof trusses were torn from the Home Depot building and were found broken and mangled in nearby fields. Cars that originated at the Home Depot parking lot were found hundreds of yards away. Asphalt was scoured from the parking lots at Walmart and a nearby pizza restaurant, and large tractor trailers were thrown up to 200 yards away. An Academy Sports and Outdoors store along Range Line sustained major structural damage, and a chair was found impaled legs first through an exterior stucco wall at that location. A nearby three-story apartment complex was also devastated, and 2 cell phone towers were found collapsed onto the remains of the apartments. Numerous cars were thrown and piled on top of each other. 100-pound manhole covers were removed from roads and thrown. Ground scouring occurred, and a Pepsi distribution plant was completely leveled in this area as well. Additional calculations of the manhole covers in Joplin by Parka Sarkar revealed that windows that winds had to have exceeded 200 miles an hour for the manhole covers to be removed. Many fatalities occurred in this area and damage was rated EF5. Extreme damage continued in the area of Deskeen Road in southeastern Joplin. Many houses and industrial areas and commercial buildings were flattened in this area as well. The industrial park near the corner of 20th and Deskeen was especially hit hard, with nearly every building flattened. Several large metal warehouse structures were swept clearly from their foundations, and several heavy industrial vehicles were thrown up to 400 yards away in this area. One of the many warehouses affected was a Cummins warehouse, a concrete block and steel building that was destroyed. The last area of EF5 damage occurred in the industrial park and the nearby Fast Trip gas station and convenience store completely being destroyed. Many homes were destroyed further to the east of the EF3 and EF4 strength in a nearby subdivision, and East Middle School sustained major damage. The tornado then continued on an east to southeast trajectory towards Interstate 44, where it weakened. Nonetheless, vehicles were blown off the highway and mangled near U.S. Route 71. The damage and around this area were rated EF2 and EF3. The weakening tornado continued to track into the rural areas of southeastern Jasper County and northeastern Newton County, where damage was generally minor to moderate, with trees, mobile homes, outbuildings, and frame homes damaged mainly at EF0 to EF1 strength. The tornado lifted east of Diamond at 6:12 p.m. Central Standard Time, according to aerial surveys. The tornado's track total length was 22.1 miles long. Overall, 6,954 homes were destroyed, 359 homes had major damage, 516 had minor damage, 158 people were killed, and 1,150 others were injured along the path. A separate EF2 tornado touched down near Wentworth from the same supercell about 25 miles east-southeast of Joplin.
I want to touch on a couple of things because mm-hmm. I know this one pretty well. The sirens that you mentioned that went off, they went off well in advance for what was thought to have been a different tornado.
Okay.
So the people of Joplin didn't think it was their warning. They thought that this was a warning for a town that was, 10, 15 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not uncommon for when you live in this area for you to be like, oh, well, that's the next town over. That's not here. I'm not going to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also rare that you have these monster tornadoes. They're becoming more frequent, it seems like.
Sure.
But, tornadoes don't typically stay on the ground as long as this one does,
mm-hmm.
as this one did.
Yeah.
And so, you think, oh, it's, maybe it's a funnel that's just touched the ground. And, we have things called spin-ups here. And that's a very common term for a very small tornado that'll just kind of spin up on the front of a storm and dissipate very quickly. It'll cause some damage, but it won't cause, what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So when it came time to fire the sirens for Joplin, they did not go off. And that is the main reason that so many people died.
They didn't go off because there was already too much damage and there was like a break in the system, or the system didn't work?
The system is, in my personal opinion, having been, an Aspie weather geek all my life.
Yeah.
Okay. The system is antiquated.
Oh, of course.
And so it's unreliable because mm-hmm. there have been more and more tornadoes that have gone unwarned by the traditional air raid siren system.
Yeah.
It's become so antiquated. It's so unreliable. It was the gold standard forever, but it's gotten to where now there's a good chance, like, for example, our tornado sirens, mm-hmm. half the sirens in the city that we lived in did not go off.
Yeah.
But the whole system failed, and there's been books written about it as mm-hmm. far as the Joplin tornado, and that's why there were so many deaths, because people, that time of year, the siren system is designed for people that are outside to be warned that there's oncoming dangerous weather.
Sure.
Your best bet is obviously to for it to have some sort of relay to your phone of a warning, mm-hmm. but at that time, I don't know that that was even a possibility, but they rely on the system too much.
Yeah.
And you need to get your warnings more than one place. But that's what attributes to so many deaths in Joplin on that.
Sure. You're right. I mean, the warning system is extremely antiquated and extremely broken. And, you know, some days it works, some days it doesn't. And you have a failure in the system when the event is going on. Mm-hmm. Suddenly half your system doesn't work. You know, it's like playing, you know, it's a house of cards.
Well, and you know, I'll say another thing too. And I apologize if anybody works for the National Weather Service or Storm Prediction Center, but you know, that was my dream job when I was a kid, was mm-hmm. to work for the National Weather Service. And it seems like in the past few years, they have changed what watches and warnings they issue. And now they've added different levels and mm-hmm. they've added different, you know, now there's tornado emergencies. And it confuses the public as to what,
yeah.
you know, what level of urgency they're truly at. So I feel like, you know, between that and then having an antiquated system that, you know, that's why there's been kind of a rise in tornado deaths, because it's just like people don't really know what to do.
They don't know what to take seriously.
No.
I mean, you already are dealing with a public that is very difficult to get to move to take action in emergency situations to begin with. That's coming as a broadcaster.
Yes.
Just trying to relay emergency information. And you have people running out trying to find the storm, trying to look at the storm, trying to not taking shelter mm-hmm. or just not taking it seriously. Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly difficult as a broadcaster on the air when the system that you're trying to explain to the public is changing its definition of shit every other year. And then for the people who are listening to be like, oh, that's what this means. When I'm confused on the air about what the fuck I'm talking about, I don't imagine the general public has much of a better idea than me in yeah. most cases. And that's what we had been dealing with at that point in time, because they kept changing. This is what this means. This is what that means. That's great. You can't change shit like that. It's like next week, we're going to start changing stoplights. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, we're going to add a blue one in there too.
Yeah.
And let's put pink in the scale too, just for the hell of it. It's like, well, what the hell does that mean? You know, it's confusing.
Well, and one of the things that, I mean, you and I both grew up in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Tornadoes were part of our life. So we always knew the difference between a watch and a warning.
Yeah.
You think about it, you know.
That wasn't that complicated.
That was not that complicated, but somebody coming from another part of the country, you would think that a warning's like, I'm warning you.
Mm-hmm.
And then a watch is like, you better watch out.
I get what you're saying. Like,
you would almost think it would be backwards.
The emphasis. And I never took it that way because we grew up with it. But you're right. Someone who's coming from another area would find that somewhat confusing. But then when you have all the different levels of emergency, particularly dangerous situation, you know, it's like, look, either take shelter or you don't have to worry about it right now. we need to get this down. You know, I mean, there should be terms within the community to understand for communicating meteorologically.
Mm-hmm.
But then there should be a way of, okay, here's how we tell the public what's going on.
I think the public terminology needs to be dumbed down,
yeah.
just to be honest.
Just to be understood.
I know all of our listeners would have no problem understanding,
yeah.
get underground or get to a shelter. Yeah. But this added levels of things that just complicates, and it's showing in the numbers of people that are getting hurt and getting killed.
Yeah.
So that's my rant. Sorry. I was going to be a meteorologist till I graduated high school. That was what I was going to do. And thank God that I didn't, because after having been around tornadoes all my life, I don't think some of the things we've seen, I could have gotten through on the air.
Yeah. That's fun. It's interesting too, because we do get so many, our phones get alerts all the freaking time now. This was 10 years ago. Our phones didn't get alerts all the time back then.
No.
Many of us didn't even have phones that do this shit. I don't even know if, I want to say it was around that time we started, the system started to go. I remember you get the automatic alert.
Mm-hmm.
But that was new at that time, and I don't even know if it was working at that time.
Yeah.
So tornado warnings and things like that, when you get them, to a lot of people too, it's just another thing that's coming across your phone. And I'll tell you something that does not fucking help. When media entities, particularly television stations, and I'll attack my own right here, right now, because I think this is fucking bullshit. When they invent their own fucking warnings.
Yes.
And start talking about them on the air and start pushing them out through their app and saying, it's a lightning warning. It's a strong wind warning.
Or a heavy rain warning.
A heavy rain warning. This is meteorologist jackass at Super Channel 42. A light wind warning is in effect. What the fuck does that mean? And when you have that constantly bombarding your phone, guess what? When the tornado warning actually happens, nobody fucking knows or cares.
No.
Because they just got 42 lightning warnings and all these other random warnings that you invented that are not real warnings that were invented at the television station by some producer saying, oh, we're going to get so many clicks if we start telling there's lightning warnings. It hurts. It hurts people's understanding of what is legitimate and what is not legitimate. And I honestly think should not be fucking allowed. Like, I think there should be a law against independent meteorological organizations using the word warning or watch in any form.
I agree.
You can't issue your own fucking warnings and watches.
No, they have. That has to come from the National Weather Service before they can say that.
Now,
but if they make up their own terminology, you know, I can say it's a we have an out of milk warning.
Yeah.
You know, we're
it's
out of
insane.
Milk.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think that, you know, when you live in a part of the country where you deal with this, you know, you need more than one source to get your weather information.
Now, on that same note where I just ripped apart TV meteorologists, and I have friends who are TV meteorologists, I would also say there have been several occasions where the TV meteorologists are calling the tornado and warning people well before National Weather Service issues a warning.
Yeah.
So I think we need both, just as you're saying, but we need something more understood or understood and more understood, more understood and accepted, and just a rule.
Mm-hmm.
Who issues what warning? What we're calling shit? Because all we're doing is confusing the public, and when you confuse the public in an emergency, people die.
Well, I would lay money 10-1 that the meteorologists, especially the chief meteorologists at these stations, they're not pro lightning warning or heavy rain warning, because they understand.
I'm not blaming them.
No, they understand that that's going to make them be tuned out. You know, this is purely, you know, stations saying, oh, we need to get your attention. We need to get your attention.
You know who came up? That is consultants, and that's 23-year-old producers that are saying, like, oh, yeah, well, because TV stations are owned by like 7 companies now across, and they own all of them. Mm-hmm. You implement it on one station, then all of them do it. It's something created by people who did not think that through, and they're getting more clicks, and they're getting, it's monetarily driven, and that's the wrong thing. I'm pissed off when I go and look at a weather app, or I'm trying to watch emergency weather coverage, and I have to watch a 30-second pre-roll for Joe's Breaks and More during the emergency.
Yeah.
Now, I'm fine if you're going to run that shit for the regular updates, but I think that needs to be turned off during emergency situations.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's technology. It's new stuff. It's not run well, because TV stations, if you're a TV person, you know as well as I do, they're staffed to bare bone levels as well. So
and I think we should you and I dial it back a little bit and put a little perspective on this. You know, we almost took a direct hit in Wichita.
Yeah.
We did take a direct hit in Rogers.
Yeah.
And so we're a little bit passionate about this. Thank God, you know, we haven't had any major life altering damage or injuries or deaths, but you know, we're very passionate about getting the right information, because we've gotten to where we know how to read the radar ourselves.
Yeah.
And when it looks funny, we just go to the storm shelter because we can.
There's a lot of, I think everybody who's working in that, delivering the information and deciphering the information, like the meteorologists and people on the air, all have good intent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the system needs to be reevaluated, and everyone needs to agree, here's how we do it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it is confusing as hell. Let's continue on with this story, this event, the Joplin tornado of 2011. A preliminary survey of the tornado damage by the National Weather Service office in Springfield, Missouri, began on May 23rd. The initial survey confirmed a violent tornado rated as high as EF4. Subsequent damage surveys, however, found evidence of more intense damage, and so the tornado was upgraded to an EF5 with estimated winds over 200 miles an hour, peaking at 225 to 250 miles an hour. According to the local branch of the American Red Cross, about 25% of Joplin was destroyed, but the city's emergency manager stated that the number was between 10 and 20%, with roughly 2,000 buildings destroyed. According to the National Weather Service, emergency managers reported damage at 75% of Joplin. In total, nearly 7,000 houses were destroyed, most of which were flattened or blown away, and over 850 others were damaged. Communications were lost in the community, and power was knocked out to many areas. With communications down, temporary cell towers had to be constructed. By May 24, three towers owned by AT&T and Sprint had been restored. Due to the severe damage caused by the tornado, the traveling Piccadilly Circus was unable to perform as scheduled. As a result, the circus employees brought their two adult elephants to help drag damaged automobiles and other heavy debris out of the roadway to make a path for first responders. East of Joplin, a risk management plan facility released 3,000 to 5,000 pounds of anhydrous ammonia. It was contained within 2 days. The catastrophe and risk modeling firm Equat Inc. had estimated the damage at $1 billion to $3 billion U.S. dollars, but noted that the true damage is not yet known since the firm does not have access to data on uninsured losses. More than 19,000 insurance claims had been filed by mid-June. The impact on the insurance industry is not so much the number of claims, but the cumulative effect of such a large number of total losses. More than 2,500 local people employed in insurance have been involved in this capacity. It's assumed that State Farm will assume the largest share of these losses, having a market share of 27% for homeowners insurance and 21% for automobile insurance. The $2.8 billion in damage is the largest amount for a tornado since 1950. As of May of 2013, the official death toll from the National Weather Service was listed at 158, while the city of Joplin listed the death toll at 161. The list was up to 162 until one man's injuries were found to be unrelated to the event. In one indirect fatality, a policeman was struck by lightning and killed while assisting with recovery and cleanup efforts the day after the storm. Another five indirect fatalities occurred after a disease outbreak infected 13 people, possibly 18. Shortly after the tornado, authorities had listed 1,300 people as missing, but the number quickly dwindled as they were accounted for. Many people were reported to have been trapped in destroyed houses. 17 people were rescued from the rubble the day after the tornado struck. The Missouri Emergency Management Agency reported more than 990 injured. Of 146 sets of remains recovered from the rubble, 134 victims have been positively identified by June 1st. Due to the horrific injury suffered by some victims, some different sets of remains were from a single person. On June 2nd, it was announced that four more victims had died. Six people were killed when St. John's was struck by the tornado. Five of those deaths were patients on ventilators who died after the building lost power and a backup generator did not work. The sixth fatality was a hospital visitor. The Joplin Globe reported that 54 people of their people died in the residences, 32 people died in non-residential areas, and 14% died in vehicles or outdoors. Joplin officials after the tornado announced plans to require hurricane ties or other fasteners between the houses and their foundations. Devices added about $600 to the U.S. construction costs. Officials rejected a proposal to require concrete basements in new houses. Officials noted that 28% of Joplin's new homes had basements as of 2009, compared with 38% 2 decades before. Officials said they rescued 944 pets and reunited 292 with owners. In 2013, the American Society of Civil Engineers published a study disputing the tornado's initial EF5 rating based on surveying damage on over 150 structures within a 6-mile segment of the storm's path. According to the report, over 83% of the damage was caused by wind speeds of 135 miles per hour or less, the maximum wind speed of an EF2 tornado. An additional 13% was caused by EF3 wind speeds, and 3% was consistent with EF4 winds. The study found no damage consistent with wind speeds over 200 miles per hour, the minimum threshold of an EF5 tornado. Researchers concluded that the inability to find EF5 damage was due to the absence of construction standards that were able to determine the necessary wind speeds. Bill Colburn, the member of the engineering team that surveyed the damage, declared that a relatively large number of buildings could have survived in Joplin if they had been built to sustain hurricane winds. However, the EF5 rating stood as the National Weather Service in Springfield, Missouri, stated that their survey teams found only a very small area of EF5 structural damage that could have easily been missed in the survey at and around St. John's Medical Center. Bill Davis, head of the NWS station in Springfield, said that the results of the study do not surprise me at all, adding that there was only a very small area of EF5 damage in Joplin. We knew right off the bat there was EF4 damage. It took us longer to identify the EF5 damage and that it would take winds over 200 miles per hour to do that damage. Additionally, the basis for the EF5 rating in Joplin was mainly contextual rather than structural. The non-conventional damage indicators, such as the removal of concrete parking stops, manhole covers, reinforced concrete porches, driveways, and asphalt, were used to arrive at the final rating of EF5, as it was concluded that these specific instances of damage were indicative of winds exceeding 200 miles an hour. The presence of wind, roud, structural debris, instances of very large vehicles such as buses, vans, and semi-trucks being thrown hundreds of yards to several blocks from their points of origin, the fact that some homeowners never located their vehicles, and the overwhelming extent and totality of the destruction in Joplin were also taken into consideration to conclude EF5 intensity. Immediately following the disaster, emergency responders were deployed within and to the city to undertake search and rescue efforts. Governor Jay Nixon declared a state of emergency for the Joplin area shortly after the tornado hit and ordered Missouri National Guard troops to the city. By May 23rd, Missouri Task Force 1, consisting of 85 personnel, 4 dogs, and heavy equipment, arrived and began searching for missing persons. 5 heavy rescue teams were also sent to the city a day later. Within 2 days, numerous agencies arrived to assist residents in the recovery process. The National Guard deployed 191 personnel and placed 2,000 more on standby to be deployed if needed. In addition, the Missouri State Highway Patrol provided 180 troopers to assist the Joplin Police Department and other local agencies with law enforcement, rescue, and recovery efforts. It also included the deployment of 5 ambulance strike teams and a total of 25 ambulances in the affected area on May 24th, as well as over 75 Marines from the Fort Leonard Wood Army Air Force Base. Within 2 years, the city's workers and community groups compiled and published Joplin Pays It Forward to give recovery advice to other places hurt by disaster. The tornado also highlighted a new form of disaster response using social media. The type of disaster response is now known as social media emergency management. News outlets began aggregating images and video from eyewitnesses shared through social media. Public citizen-led Facebook groups and websites coordinated information, needs, and offers. The results were so effective, the project became the finalist in the 2011 Mashable Awards for Best Social Good Cause Campaign. President Barack Obama toured the community on May 29th, flying into Joplin Regional Airport and speaking at a memorial at Taylor Performing Arts Center at Missouri Southern State University, about 2 miles north of the worst of the devastation. Obama had been on a state visit to Europe at the time of the storm. Members of the controversial Westboro Baptist Church were also scheduled to protest the same day in Joplin, but did not show up. There was a massive counter-protest that was organized in response to the Westboro protest, in which thousands of protesters showed up holding signs saying, "God loves Joplin, and we support you, Joplin." Engineers have criticized the tilt-up construction of the Home Depot, in which all but 2 of its walls collapsed in a domino effect after the tornado lifted the roof, killing 7 people in the front of the store, although 28 people in the back of the store survived when those walls collapsed outwards. Home Depot officials said they disagreed with the study published by the Kansas City Star and said they would use the tilt-up practice when they rebuild the Joplin store. On June 1st, the Home Depot said it would have a new temporary 30,000-square-foot building built and operational within 2 weeks. In the meantime, it opened for business in the parking lot of its demolished building. On June 20th, the Home Depot opened a temporary 60,000-foot building constructed by the company's disaster recovery team. In May of 2012, the Missouri National Guard released documents showing that four soldiers looted video game equipment and a digital camera from a ruined Walmart during cleanup efforts. According to the investigation memo, they believed the merchandise was going to be destroyed. All four soldiers were demoted and had letters of reprimand placed in their personnel files, but were never prosecuted, even though many civilian looters were prosecuted. Along with the Tri-State Tornado and the 1896 St. Louis East St. Louis Tornado, it ranks as one of Missouri's and America's deadliest tornadoes and is the costliest single tornado in U.S. history. It was the first F5 EF5 tornado in Missouri since May 20th, 1957, with an EF5 destroying several suburbs in Kansas City. It was only the second EF5 tornado in Missouri history, dating back to 1950. It was the deadliest U.S. tornado since the April 9th, 1947 tornado in Woodward, Oklahoma, and seventh deadliest in U.S. history. It was also the first single tornado since the June 8, 1953 F5 tornado in Flint, Michigan, to have 100 or more associated fatalities.
You know what one of the first things they have to do when, beyond looking for survivors, when they go into a place that's been hit by an EF5, I don't even know if you know this.
I don't know.
They have to put up street signs.
Sure.
Because they have no landmarks. There's nothing to tell where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to put up signs so that they can at least figure out where they are and where they've searched and where they haven't.
And who needs to go where.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, to think about that and to think about some of these places, the roads were literally sucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And the concrete of the driveway.
Gone.
Can you imagine something like that sucking up your driveway? I mean, blowing down a house is one thing, but pulling concrete up off the ground.
Yeah.
So it still boggles the mind when I think about what a tornado can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's definitely been part of my life, my whole life. And I, you know, it's part of the reason we live where we live is we had to get out of Wichita because
yeah.
It was just too much of a target.
Yeah. I mean, we're in an area where, you know, you still have them, but I mean, I had tornadoes, you know, in Wisconsin growing up, mm-hmm. you know, and even had an F5 that knocked a town out that was very, very close. I remember hearing it as a kid, but I never experienced that frequency of storms until living in this part of the country when this happened. And it's just, you never get used to it. At least I never did. You know, I mean, I don't know if some people do. You know, I know, you know, folks, you know, that live in hurricane bound areas. I don't know if there's ever a way to get, you know, used to it, or you never get comfortable with it, but you know, you plan that you're going to have these things happening, but it's something I don't want to have to, and didn't want to have to feel every year, that dread.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we still get warnings and stuff here, and we have, but it seems to be less frequent than that necessarily.
Knock on wood.
And we're really not that far from Joplin. I mean,
we're not, but our terrain is different. And
yeah.
There's mixed feelings about whether or not terrain affects.
Yeah.
Development and how it I mean,
I feel it does.
Tornadoes will go over hills. They
sure.
will take out whatever they want. But it you know, it's one of those things where I don't know if we know for sure that it doesn't affect it. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't.
I'm curious, is there any data out there that shows you know, tornado track, tornado intensity, you know, and we look at comparing it over fairly flat areas mm-hmm. and areas of rough terrain. And then, you know, what level of terrain are we talking about?
Sure. And, I'm sure there is. I'm just not qualified to speak on it.
I just wonder what that data would show. I mean, I could be completely off in my assumption that hillier areas or mountainous areas have fewer tornadoes. I don't know. But I'll just, my experience in living in areas that are more hilly or mountainous, I've had fewer tornado experiences there than I did in areas that were flat.
And that could be just luck.
That could be, yeah, just personal experience. But yeah, I mean, horrible situation. Hard to believe it was almost 10 years ago when that happened. Because it you know, when you have those events, you know, I think they always seem pretty close to memory.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things. It's going to wrap up today's episode of The Dark Side of Wikipedia. Thank you guys for listening. We do greatly appreciate it. Follow us on social media. If you have a suggestion for a topic, one you'd like us to have covered, feel free to shoot us a message on Instagram or Facebook, and we may use that as a future story to talk about on another episode of The Dark Side of Wikipedia. Until next time, for Jenny, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. The Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.